Now, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Paul Mullane from the HSE National Immunisation Office. Good morning, Dr. Mullane. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Thanks very much. I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the programme.
Absolutely delighted. Now, and on the programme here, we've spoken about the HPV vaccine over the last number of years. And absolutely delighted to see that there has been an uptake in it.
Absolutely. We're delighted. It reached a kind of a low around 2016 where the uptake had hit 50%. But due to great efforts on the part of colleagues in the health service within the HSE, and of course, I'm sure you're aware of the tireless and selfless advocacy work by the late Laura Brennan, we've seen a year-on-year increase, and it looks only set to continue, and we're very hopeful that Ireland will achieve over and above the 80% WHO target that it sets for HPV vaccine uptake, hopefully by the end of this school year.
And I noticed that you have a new video out with a young man on it from, I think he's from Selbridge.
That's correct. I believe you're referring to Mr. Owen Roach.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, so Owen liaised with the Brennan family, with Laura's brothers, as he, unfortunately himself, at the age of 41, was diagnosed with a HPV-related neck cancer. It had started in his tonsil, and he then discovered a lump in his neck. And he's married with two young boys. So, you know, for a fit, healthy guy otherwise, to be diagnosed with a HPV-related cancer came as a great shock. But he, fortunately, it's in remission, and he's come through this. And it's great to have him on board and to take up the baton, I suppose, in a way, and become an advocate for the HPV vaccine and a role model for men and for boys as well.
And I think for me, that's the big thing, because when we discussed HPV a number of years ago, there was the whole controversy that people saying things that were, shall we say, weren't true about the HPV vaccine, and people didn't understand what vaccines, how they work and what they were doing. That was one thing. But the other thing that for me was that young boys weren't getting it, but they're now included in the in this.
That's correct. So as of this academic year, 2019-2020, the HPV vaccination program in schools has now been extended to all boys in first year secondary school also. So now all boys and all girls in first year and secondary school are offered the vaccine. It was originally thought that there may have been enough what's called herd immunity or herd protection by vaccinating girls alone. But HPV, it's a large group of viruses, human papillomavirus. There are over 100 types, but there are particular high-risk ones. Most commonly, we'd associate those with cervical cancer, which can affect women, but it can also lead to cancers that can affect the anus, the back passage, the penis, the throat, and the head and neck also. So by extending it to boys, we confer a much greater protection overall to our population going on into the future.
And you use the word herd immunity, and maybe you just explain what that is to the listeners.
Sure. So in order to protect a population, a group of people in any particular location, in this case we'll say in Ireland, you want, for any particular vaccine for an infectious disease, you want to achieve, in some cases, you want to achieve, say, 95% coverage of the population being vaccinated to protect those who maybe have poor immune systems or disorders, or they're on chemotherapy or other medications or treatments that won't allow them to actually get the vaccination, and it's for their protection as well as the protection of the individual. For other conditions, the target may be slightly different. In the case of HPV, the WHO, that's the World Health Organization, wants to ensure at least 80% of boys and girls, men and women ultimately, will be covered by the vaccination. So it's to ensure that a majority of people for a particular condition are vaccinated to protect themselves, but more importantly as well to protect those who maybe cannot receive the vaccine for one or other reasons, and thereby protecting the population as a whole.
Yeah, and that's really important, because when we get the up to the levels that we do have proper herd immunity, it it protects the weakest in our society.
Correct. That's exactly it, Michael. And that's the aim here as well. So while there's obviously, I suppose, an interest on the individual level in terms of protecting oneself and one's family, it's, you know, a great thing. And we're lucky in Ireland to have vaccination programs that cover babies, infants, school children, and indeed adults ultimately, from getting what can be, you know, awful infectious diseases, or in the cases of HPV, which can lead to various cancers, that we have a way of preventing this. And certainly it's an even added benefit then, that knowing that by being able to receive it and get the vaccine and get vaccinated, that you're also protecting others in our society who maybe aren't in a position to receive it.
And I'm of an age that I can remember back to days when a lot of the diseases that we don't even think about today are drowned, like polio. And I remember there was a young lad in my school, and God bless him, he had got a touch of polio, and he got a very mild dose of polio. And he was going around with a caliper on his leg. So, you know, we just forget these things.
That's exactly it, I guess. You know, the proof, you can't measure, I suppose, disease and things that do not happen, but the proof is in the pudding when the numbers of cases that are seen drop to very low levels and that they almost become consigned to history. I guess the challenge for us as a population, as a society, and certainly as healthcare providers in particular, is that we don't become complacent and presume that it will stay like that without concerted and continual efforts. And I guess that's why you would have seen earlier this week, you know, we're heavily promoting the second round now of the school's vaccination program, which commences this month and will continue till the end of the school year. For the second dose of the HPV vaccine for all students in first year of secondary school, and also for the meningitis ACWY vaccine. There's a single dose of that due also at the same time.
And maybe just explain, what is the men ACWY?
So it is a vaccine that covers four different strains or types of bacteria that can cause meningitis. Some people might call it meningococcal disease. The word meningitis can often have very worrying and serious connotations, and I guess rightly so. Meningitis is an inflammation of the lining around the brain and the spinal cord, and it can progress to a thing called septicemia, commonly known as blood poisoning. Children in first year secondary school at this time have always been, since the early 2000s, been offered the meningitis C vaccine to cover the C subtype. What we've seen in recent years, an increase in some of the other types that are covered by this vaccine. So we're really delighted that we're able to now offer a meningitis vaccination that covers more strains, and in particular the W and the Y component, as these seem to have occurred more frequently in adolescents and young adults in recent years. So greater added protection against something that's very, very, very serious. I suppose just as a caveat, as a little warning and something to, I suppose, say to listeners would be that while it covers these strains that are common among these age groups, we can't be complacent, so that if a parent was ever to suspect that their son or daughter had meningitis, then they would seek prompt medical attention. It may cover a lot of different strains of meningitis in this vaccine, but may not cover absolutely every other type. There are a couple of other types of bacteria that can cause meningitis, and you can get viral meningitis also. So looking out for signs or symptoms, if someone was to complain of severe headache, difficulty with looking at the light, and in particular if they were to develop the, what's called the classical non-blanching rash on their skin, then that would be a time to seek prompt medical attention.
And when you say non-blanching rash, that's the one when you put a glass on your
tumbler
skin.
Tumbler or a glass, exactly.
You can still see it.
Correct. So I guess the thing is, it's to, I suppose, make sure that people are still aware that, you know, it's a serious condition and it can still happen even in people who are fully vaccinated against multiple types. But by virtue of us being able to offer the new men ACWY booster, we know that we're providing much more well-rounded and robust protection for our young people.
And I can't stress enough to people how important getting your children vaccinated right the way up from the MMR and all those childhood ones all the way up. And I think a good example of what can happen when you don't is that we had the likes of measles nearly eradicated, and because of some erroneous and scurrilous accusations, people didn't get their children vaccinated, and now we've had over the last couple of years we've had an upsurge in this coming on.
Absolutely, and I guess the kind of simple way of putting it is that why is vaccination important? Well, to vaccinate, it's a simple, it's a safe, it's an effective way of protecting people against very harmful diseases before they come into contact with them, in the case of infectious diseases or in the case of the HPV vaccine, preventing HPV infection, which could lead to various types of cancers. So it not only, as we said, protects the individuals, protects others in our community, it reduces the spread of disease. And we're very fortunate to have a robust vaccination program right from, you know, childbirth, right from infancy through to adolescence and adulthood. And so again, I would, I suppose, appeal to listeners, given that the focus just at the moment in particular is our adolescent boys and girls, that the second dose of the HPV vaccine is due at the moment in this coming term, as well as the new men ACWY booster. In terms of any, if people are unsure whether they have signed up for it or if they've consented, when the information would have gone out to schools last September at the beginning of the school year, parents or guardians would have signed a consent for all of these doses at the time. But if they're unsure, or they didn't receive any at the time, or they declined at the time, they can rejoin this program now. And if there's any uncertainty as well, they could contact their school immunization teams. There's information available on our website, that's immunization.ie. and specifically for the HPV vaccine at hpv.ie also.
What I was going to ask you, and this is going off topic at the moment, but it's very current. This current coronavirus that's going around, is there any sign of a vaccine coming for that?
Not currently, Michael. I suppose vaccine development is a complex enough science, and it can take time to turn it around. To give an example, we plan in January and February of a current year for the following flu season. So, for example, even though flu vaccination starts usually in late September, early October for the beginning of the influenza, the flu season, you know, the planning stage has to go back almost a full year in advance of that. And certainly if we're dealing with something that's a lesser known quantity like the novel coronavirus, then it's a bit more perhaps of a moving target. So I suppose the short answer is currently no, but I know that the WHO, the European Centres for Disease Prevention and Control, that's the ECDC, would be looking into this, you know, currently as we speak, to see are there potential treatments out there, whether it's antiviral treatment or whether it'll be future vaccination. So I guess a work in progress is the short answer.
Yeah, you mentioned the flu vaccine there. I always think that is a very interesting one to look at, is how you actually come up with the strains that are going to be used. And am I correct in saying that you look at Australia?
That's right. So I guess we look at the northern versus the southern hemisphere, and well, it's winter here, it's summer in the southern hemisphere, and vice versa. And I guess the pattern that emerges during the flu season in one half of the world is essentially studied to look at the likelihood of what strains may then occur in the northern hemisphere. And we're a very globalized society now. We travel, people travel regularly and far afield, and in order to, I suppose, develop an appropriate vaccine each season, it needs to be looked at carefully what's happening in the other side of the world in order to develop something that will target hopefully the vast majority of strains that will cause influenza, it's an inexact science in that it has to target multiple strains that may cause flu, and flu is particularly dangerous, I suppose, for people with underlying conditions, heart and lung conditions, and the very elderly. But generally speaking, if anybody is unsure should they get the flu vaccine or not, they should speak to a trusted health professional, be it their GP, their pharmacist. We have information on our website, immunisation.ie. And I suppose a final word on that is it's still currently the 2019-2020 flu season up until the end of April. People might often think, oh, when the weather gets better, we get out of winter, it's not going to have any benefit for me. Whereas certainly vaccinating up to and including even the end of March is useful for people who may be uncertain.
And I know I'm taking up an awful lot of your time, but maybe you just, if some of our listeners are a bit concerned and want to know a little bit more about the HPV vaccine or the MenACWY vaccine, where can they get more information?
So we've multiple sources of information. As mentioned there a while ago, there's our own immunisation.ie. That's the HSE's National Immunisation Office website. It's been accredited by the World Health Organization and the Vaccine Safety Network. We have a subset of that, which is the HPV.ie website. You've also mentioned flu. There's a section specifically for flu. We'll have information on our Twitter feed at HSE National Immunisation Office. Also, that's at HSE IMS. And you can also look up for other credible sources online, including the World Health Organization. In terms of speaking to a trusted health professional, that would also be advisable. So a GP, a practice nurse, a pharmacist. And if people wanted to have a query sent in to ourselves also in the immunization office, they can email us at immunization@hse.ie also.
One last thing.
Sure.
Somebody who feels they have the flu or some whatever it is that might be infectious, am I correct in saying that they should phone their doctor rather than going to the to the surgery?
I suppose that would carry for many respiratory illnesses, so ones where there's going to be kind of coughing and sneezing or anything like that. But certainly, if there's a suspicion of flu or otherwise, it's best to err on that side of caution indeed, because if they are to go to their GP and wait in a waiting room, you may put others at risk or expose them. Whereas if the GP or other clinic knows in advance, they can make provision and say, we'll see you at the end of a session, or the waiting area will be clear, or that you won't essentially have to go through a group of people or otherwise. So yes, absolutely. If someone is uncertain in that regard, they should phone ahead.
Dr. Mullane, many, many thanks for giving us your time this morning.
Thanks very much, Michael. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All the best. God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.